Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novick. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning Hilchot Ishut Perek Yud Tet. This perek continues the discussion of the Tana'i Ketubah, which are relevant after the death of the husband. The last perek addressed the situation of the Almana and her right to collect Mizonot and Mador from the estate of her late husband. This perek moves on to the children of the deceased, the Atomim. We'll learn first about one Tana'i Ketubah, which relates specifically to the sons, and then about another one, which relates specifically to the daughters. The perek ends with a discussion about how to determine priority in a case of limited resources between the claims of the widow, the sons, and the daughters on the estate of the deceased. Halacha Aleph. Mitna'ei Ketubah, shiyu banav ha-zacharim yorshim ketubat imam, unidunyata, shichnisa b'torat nechsei tzon barzel, v'achar kach cholkin sh'ar hayusha im acheihem b'shaveh. One of the Tana'i Ketubah is a clause which guarantees, in the event that the wife dies before her husband, that when her husband dies later, her sons alone will inherit her Ketubah and the Nechsei Tzon Barzel she brought into the marriage, along with their share in the remainder of their father's estate. This is known in the Gemara as Ketubat Benin Dichrin, Aramaic for Ketubah of the Male Sons, and its purpose is straightforward. Chazal wished to encourage a father, in order to promote his daughter's marriage prospects, to give her a large dowry, nedunya, when the time comes to marry her off. But a father, Kolam Ruvain, may have a legitimate concern. What if his daughter dies before her husband? The husband will inherit this large dowry, Yerusha Tabal, as we learned in Perek Yud Bet. And if, by the time of his death, the husband has children from other wives, then the dowry he inherited from Reuven's daughter will be split between all of his sons, some of whom may not be related to Reuven at all. The Tana'i Ketubah of Ketubat Benin Dichrin is meant to assure Reuven that only his grandchildren will inherit both the Nedunya that his daughter brings into the marriage, as well as her Ketubah, both Ikar and Tosefet, which the husband never needed to pay. Why does the Rambam specify the Nechsei Tzon Barzel portion of the Nedunya? Because this is the only part which becomes the property of the husband, and therefore remain in his possession after his wife's death. The rest, the Nechsei Malog, belong to the wife, and go directly to her Yorshim upon her death. Halacha Bet illustrates how Ketubat Benin Dichrin works with a concrete example. Ketzad, Nasa Isha, Ketubata Unedunyata Elef, Vialda Ben Umeita Bechayav, Vacharkach Nasa Isha Acheret, Ketubata Unedunyata Mataim, Veholida Ben Umeita Bechayav, Vacharkach Meitu, Viniach Alpaim, Benomin Arishona Yoresh Elef Shibichtubat Imo, Uvenomin Hashnia Yoresh Mataim Shibichtubat Imo, Vashaar Yoshinoto Beshave, Nimza Biad Ben Arishona. Elef Barbameot, Uvea Ben Ashnia, Sheshmeot. Suppose Yaakov marries a woman named Leah, and the combined value of Leah's Ketubah and Nedunya, meaning, again, just the Nechsei Tzon Barzel, comes out to 1,000 zuz. Leah has a son, Yehuda, and then she dies during Yaakov's lifetime. Yaakov later marries a woman named Rachel, and the combined value of her Ketubah and Nedunya is only 200 zuz. Rachel has a son, Yosef, and then she too dies. When Yaakov eventually dies, suppose he has a total of 2,000 zuz. Then, based on the Ketubat Benin Dichrin, Yehuda will automatically inherit the 1,000 zuz of his mother's Ketubah and Nedunya. Yosef will automatically inherit 200, the value of his mother's Ketubah and Nedunya, and the remaining 800 zuz will be split between them in the ordinary manner of inheritance. Thus, Yehuda ends up with 1,400 zuz, and Yosef with 600 zuz. Parenthetically, we note that the Rambam seems to assume here that Yehuda is not Yaakov's Bechor, perhaps because there is an older daughter. If he is the Bechor, then he receives 2/3 of the remaining 800, that is about 533 zuz, and Yosef gets the rest. Halacha Gimel. B'mad Divrei Mamurim, b'shehiniach yater al kedei shtei ketubot dinar echad o yater, kedei shiyachleku ha-sha'ar b'shaveh. Aval im lo hiniach yater dinar, cholkin hakol b'shaveh. Shim yershu elu ketubat imam, ve'elu ketubat imam, v'lo yisha'er dinar lachloko to ben hayoshim, nimtza t'nai ze mevatel chiluk yirusha ben abanim b'shaveh, shehu mina Torah. There is a caveat. Ketubat benin dichrin applies only in a situation where the assets of the deceased include at least a dinar, that is, a zuz, aside from the amounts which would be automatically inherited by each son. The reason for this is that Chazal did not want to uproot entirely the Doraita institution of Yerusha, inheritance, by rewriting completely how the assets of the deceased must be distributed. In the example from Halacha Bet, aside from the combined values of the ketubot and the dunyot of Leah and Rachel, Yaakov had 800 zuz, which could be split among his sons according to the usual laws of Yerusha. But if Yaakov's estate upon his death was only 1,200 zuz, or even 1,200 plus a small amount less than a dinar, then his sons would just have split this entire amount according to the rules of Yerusha, and the mechanism of ketubat binin dichrin would not apply. Halacha Dalet clarifies that even if the husband had many deceased wives, each with a son or sons to receive the ketubah and the dunya of the mother, the mechanism of ketubat binin dichrin kicks in as long as the value of the estate is at least one dinar more than the combined value of all the ketubot and the dunyot. Halacha Hei, Amru Haytomim, Harei Anu Ma'alin Al Nichse Avinu Yater Dinar, Kedei Sheitlu Ketubat Iman, Ein Shomin Lehen, Ela Shamin Et HaNechasim Bevei Din Kama Shayu Shavin Mishat Mitat Avihem. Af Al Pishnit Rabu O Nitma'atu Achar Mitat Avihen, Kodem Sheyavohu Lachlok. Ein shaminotan ela kishaat mitat avihem. Suppose that in our example from Halacha Bet, Yaakov had died with only 1,200 zuz, so that based on Halacha Gimel, the entire amount should be split according to the usual laws of inheritance. Clearly, it is in Yehuda's interest to contribute a single dinar to his father's estate, so that the mechanism of ketubat binin dichrin can kick in, and he can receive the full 1,000 zuz of his mother's ketubah and nedunya, rather than splitting the estate evenly with his brother Yosef. Our halacha writes that this is impossible. Not only that, but even if the value of Yaakov's estate increases to more than 1,200 zuz after his death due to a loan which came due, or an inheritance received from some deceased relative, this does not allow the ketubat binin dichrin to take effect. All that matters is the total value of the assets of the father at the moment he dies. Conversely, Halacha Vav adds, a debt owed by the father does not detract from the total value of his estate. So even if Yaakov dies with, say, 1,400 zuz, but he owes 300 zuz in a debt which will come due in a week or a month, we still consider his estate to be worth 1,400 zuz, not 1,100 zuz. And therefore, ketubat binin dichrin applies to allow each of Yehuda and Yosef to automatically receive his mother's ketubah and nedunya. Halacha Zayin. Mi shehaya nasui shtei nashim, umeita achat mehen b'chayav, v'achat achar moto, v'lo banim mishtehen. Af al pi shlo hiniach yater al shtei aktubot, im nishba'a hashniya shuvat amana, kodem shetamut, baneha kodmin li rash ktubata, mipnei she'inan yorshin ktubat imam bitnai ze, ela yirusha shel Torah. V'achar kach yorshin bnei harishona ktubat imam bitnai ze, v'im nishar sham klum, chokin oto b'shaveh. Vim meta kodem shetishava, bnei arishona yorshin ketubat imam bilvad, v'ashaar cholkin b'shaveh. This halacha is best explained with an example. In the example from Halacha Bet, suppose that Rachel, the second wife, lived longer and was alive when Yaakov died. And suppose that the total value of Yaakov's estate upon his death is 1,200 zuz, exactly the total amount of both Leah's and Rachel's ketubot and nedunyot. Rachel takes the usual shvua of an almana from Perek Tet Zayin, that she received no advance payment of her ketubah during Yaakov's lifetime. If Rachel dies before collecting her ketubah, then her son Yosef receives her ketubah and nedunya of 200 zuz, and Yehuda receives his mother's ketubah and nedunya of 1,000 zuz, even though there is no extra dinar to split according to the usual rules of Yerusha. Why is this so? Because unlike in the case where both wives die before Yaakov, in this case, there is a d'oraita process of inheritance taking place. Because Rachel took the shvua of an almana before she died, her ketubah is considered hers, and so her son Yosef inherits it from her by Torah law, as we saw back in Perek Tet Zayin, with no need for the mechanism of ketubat binin dichrin. Since the institution of Yerusha Doraita is not completely pushed aside, there is no obstacle to applying ketubat binin dichrin, and therefore Yehuda receives the entire 1,000 zuz of his mother's ketubah and nedunya. Halacha Chet has nothing to do with ketubat binin dichrin, but just notes that if all wives outlive the father, then each one's son inherits her ketubah only if she takes the shvua of an almana before she dies. Otherwise, the son has no right to his mother's ketubah, as we saw in Perek Tet Zayin. We note, however, though the Rambam is silent about it here, that this is not the case regarding the Nechsei Tzon Barzel of each wife's Nedunya. As we saw in the last parak, these can be claimed by an Almana even without a Shvua, and thus when she dies, her son or sons inherit these Nechsei Tzon Barzel directly from her. The discussion of Ketubat Bnei Dichrin ends with a very important din in the second half of Halacha Tet, which sheds light on the entire nature of this mechanism. V'chol yoresh ketubat imo shemeita b'chayei aviv eino toref nechasim meshubadim elam b'mnei chorim kechol hayorshim. When ketubat benin dichrin applies, and a son receives the value of his mother's ketubah and nedunya upon her husband's death, this amount can only be taken from nechasim b'nei chorim, property held by the husband at that time, not from nechasim meshubadim, land which he had owned when he married the mother, but then sold to someone else. The ketubat benin dichrin does not have the status of a debt owed by the husband to the son of the deceased mother. If it did, then he could collect it from nechasim meshubadim, like any creditor holding a shtar. Rather, it is considered a form of inheritance, albeit a rabbinic form. An inheritance takes into account only what a person has in his possession at the moment he dies. There are other nafka minot of this fundamental question of whether ketubat benin dichrin is a debt or a form of inheritance, but we won't elaborate on them here. One last point about ketubat benin dichrin before we proceed to another Tanai ketubah altogether. Back in Perek Tet Zayin, we saw that while Chazal established that the ketubah and all the Tanai ketubah must be collected only from karka, the Gaonim changed this later and extended the collection to metaltalin as well. But the Rambam wrote there that since the practice of ketubat benin dichrin has not spread everywhere like that of the ketubah itself and the other Tanai ketubah, the change introduced by the Gaonim doesn't apply to it. And so any son collecting ketubat benin dichrin, even now after the Gaonim, may do so only from karka and not from metaltalin. Halacha Yud. ומתנאי כתובה שתהיינה הבנות ניזונות מנכסי אביהן, אחר מותו עד שיתארסו או עד שיבגורו. בגרה בת, אף אבי שלא נתארסה, או שנתארסה אף אבי שלא בגרה, אין לה מזונות. ובת הניזונת מנכסי אביה לאחר מותו, מעשה ידיה ומציאתה לעצמה, לא לאחים. One of the Tanai Ketubah is that a man's daughters continue to receive mizonot from his estate after his death until they either marry, Erusin, or reach the age of Bagrut, whichever comes first. Note that if a daughter marries, the mizonot from her father's estate end at Erusin, even though in general, a husband only begins to provide mizonot to his wife starting at Nisuin. So how does this daughter get fed between Erusin and Nisuin? The Rambam explains later in Halacha Tet Vav. If she is a bogeret, then she can work to provide herself with mizonot. But if she is a ketana or a nara, then her husband, who is mekadesher, assumes responsibility for mizonot from that point, earlier than usual. Anyone who is mekadesh, a ketana or a nara who has no father to provide her with mizonot, certainly does not wish to see her begging for food, and therefore he accepts this financial burden upon himself even before nisuin. Unlike the almana, who must relinquish her maisei yadayim to the yorshim in exchange for the mizono she receives from them, the daughters get to keep their maisei yadayim, and certainly their metziot, which even the almana gets to keep. The reason given for this in the Gemara is that a father wants his daughters to have as much income as possible, presumably in order to increase their marriage prospects, a factor which is not as critical regarding the almana. Therefore, even though the daughters receive mizonot from their brothers who inherited the estate, the father intended for them to keep their maisei yadayim as well. Halacha Yud Aleph. Poskin labat mizonot uchsut umador minichsei avia kederech sheposkin la'almana umochrin limizon habanot uchsutan b'lo achreza kederech shemochrin limizon ha'almana uchsuta ela shayisha poskin la lefi kvoda uchvod bala. The rules governing mizonot for the daughters are similar to those of mizonot for the widow that we saw in the last parak. The brothers must provide not only food, but also clothing and a place to live. And if land needs to be sold in order to use the proceeds to purchase mizonot, then it is sold without auctioning it off, hachraza, due to the urgency of the matter. But there are two differences between the daughters and the almana. One, whereas mizonot for the almana are provided at the level of her or her husband's social status, whichever is higher, ola imo, veina yoredet imo, Mizonah for the daughters may be limited to basic necessities, irrespective of social status. 2. Recall from the last parak that the Rambam requires the Amana to take a Shavua before Beit Din intervened to sell land from the estate for her Mizonot, against the opinion of the Ravid. The daughters, in contrast, never need to take a Shavua, because we have absolutely no reason to believe that their father gave them before his death some valuable object in lieu of Mizonot, as he may have given to his wife. Halacha Yud Bet. Ein habanim yorshim ktubat imam, velo habanot nizonot bitnaim elu, ad shiyesh shtar ktuba yotzei mitachat yadam. Aval im ein sham shtar ktuba, ein lahem klum. Shema machla imam ktubata, vim ein darkam lichtov ktuba, yesh lahem kefi hatnaim. Regarding both tnae ktuba of this perek, the ketubat benin dichrin for the sons, and the mizonot for the daughters, the Rambam writes here, as he wrote regarding Mizonot of the Almana in the last parak, that these only take effect if the sons or daughters can produce the ketubah document in a place where the ketubah document is written at all. Otherwise, we are concerned that their mother forgave the entire ketubah, in which case the ketubah and all of the accompanying tanaik ketubah become null and void. The Ravid finds this statement incredible. Hafle vafele. Does the right of the daughters to Mizonot really depend on the ketubah of their mother? According to the Ravid, even if the mother forgives the entire ketubah, or if she was divorced and the ketubah paid to her in full, the father's estate remains obligated to provide Mizonot to the daughters. For the Ravid, the din of Mizonot Habat is not like the other Tanai ketubah, and does not depend on the continued validity of the ketubah, though as we'll see in Halach Yodalid, it only applies if there was a ketubah to begin with. Rather, this Mizonot Habat is an independent obligation, very similar to the requirement of Parnasat Habat, which we'll learn about in the next parak. This is the opinion of other Rishonim as well, and the Ramah accepts it lahalacha. Halacha Yud Gimel says that a father is powerless to declare on his deathbed that one of the Tnae Ketubah, which is supposed to take effect after his death, Mizonot of the Almana or of the daughters, or the Ketubat Benin Dichrin, should not take effect. Whatever property he gives away to others before his death as a regular gift, a matnat bari, obviously cannot be used after his death for mizonot or for ketubat benin dichrin, because it no longer belongs to him. However, if he attempts to give a deathbed gift, a matnat shchiv merah, this does not detract at all from his obligations in the tanai ketubah, because a matnat shchiv merah only takes effect after death, at the same time as the tanai ketubah, which take priority over a gift. Halacha Yudalid. Bat ha-mema'enet, harehi kishar ha-banot, v'yesh la-mezonot, aval bat ha-yivama, uvat ha-shniya, uvat ha-rusa, uvat ha-musa, ein lehem mezonot achar mitat avihen bitnai ze, aval b'chayi avihen, hu chaya b'mezonotam, kidin shar ha-banim v'abanot b'chayi avihen. The only daughters whose mezonot must be provided for after the father's death as part of the Tanai Ketubah are his daughters born in the context of a regular marriage, excluding the following. Bat Harusa, a daughter conceived during Erusin, when the father and mother were not yet permitted to each other, and before the Ketubah took effect. Bat Hashnia, a daughter of a woman forbidden to the father as a Shnia La'arayot, who we'll see in Parak Chaf Dalid has no Ketubah at all. Bat Anusa, a daughter of a woman who the father raped and was then required to marry. This woman has no ketubah because her husband is forbidden to divorce her, as we'll learn in Hilchot Na'arah Betula. And the point of the ketubah is to deter a husband from divorcing his wife. The common denominator of all these daughters is that their mothers have no ketubah, hence no tana'i ketubah, obligating the father's estate to support the daughters. Also, if the father had a daughter conceived through Yibum with his late brother's widow, then his estate does not need to provide her with mizonot after his death, because her mother's ketubah is collected from the estate of her first husband, the brother who died first, obligating her in Yibum. The Rambam begins this halacha with a very cryptic line. He writes that a daughter of a mima'enet does receive mizonot like any other daughter, even though the miyun of her mother retroactively nullify the entire marriage. The problem with this statement is that the marriage of a mima'enet, by definition, ended when she was a ketana, because only a ketana can do miyun. So how can the mima'enet possibly have a daughter? The Rambam himself wrote back in Perek Bet that giving birth is a sure sign that a woman is a gedola, and therefore any mother is unable to do miyun. The Magen Mishnah suggests that whereas a woman who gives birth must be a gedola, she can be pregnant while still a ketana, So the Rambam speaks here of a mima'enet who did miyun while pregnant, then gave birth afterwards. This answer raises other difficulties, which we won't go into. But we note that most Rishonim, including the Ravid in his Asaga here, understand the Gemara, which is the source of this halacha, to mean something entirely different. It speaks not about a bat ha-mima'enet, but rather about the mima'enet herself. And mima'enet here doesn't mean a wife who actually did miyun, but rather one who could have done miyun, but was still married to her husband when he died. Since she is still a ketana, she returns to her father's home after becoming a widow. Nonetheless, the Gemara says, according to the reading of most Rishonim, she too gets mizonot from her late husband's estate like any other almana. It must be emphasized that in all the cases listed in Halach Yudalid, the exemption from mizonot tabat is only after the father's death. While he is alive, a father must provide mizonot to all of his sons and daughters, as we learned in Perek Yud Bet, midoraita up to age 6, and based on takanat usha all the way to adulthood. We already discussed halacha tetvav earlier, and halacha tetzayin says that a daughter who marries while receiving mizonot from her father's estate, but then is either divorced or widowed before she is a bogeret, goes back to receiving mizonot from her father's estate until she is moreset again or until she becomes a bogeret. We continue with halacha yud zayin. Mi shemeit v'hiniach banim uvanot, yirshu abanim kol nechasim, v'hein zanit et achiyotehem ad shivgoru o ad shitarsu. B'me devarim amurim, b'shihiniach nechasim shefshar shizonu mehen abanim, v'abanot ke'echad ad shivgoru abanot. V'eilu hina nikraim nechasim rubim. Aval im ein ba nechasim shiniach ela pachot mize, motziim mehen mezonot abanot ad shivgoru, v'notnin ashar labanim. V'im ein sham ela kdei mezon habanot bilvad, habanot nizonot mehen ad shivgoru, o ad shitarsu, v'abanim yishalu al haptachim. Until now, we've described a situation in which a father dies, his sons inherit his property, and they provide his daughters with mizonot. This is indeed what happens when the father leaves behind a substantial estate, nechasim merubim, with enough to feed both the sons and daughters until each daughter reaches the age of bagrut. But if the estate is smaller than this, nechasim muatim, then Beit Din must set aside enough to feed the daughters until each reaches the age of bagrut, and they give the sons only whatever remains. If nothing remains, then the sons don't receive anything at all, and they need to beg for food if they have no alternative source of income. The reasoning is that Chazal only established the Tanai Ketuba of Mizonot for daughters, not for sons. Sons only get Yerusha, inheritance, and only after the daughters get as much as they need for mizonot. Halacha yudchet. B'me devarim amurim, b'shihiniach karka, aval iminiach metaltalin, ho'il uvitakanat hageonim, hu shizonu habanot min metaltalin, hari habanot v'abanim nizonot ka'achat min hanechasim ha'ilu hamuatim, shelo tiknu lehem b'metaltalin ela shiu kabanim, uvaze horu hageonim. The priority of the daughters over the sons, based on the Tanai Ketuba of Mizonot, which takes precedence over Yerusha, applies only to the original Ketuba as established by Chazal, and which is collected only from the Karka portion of the estate. Once the Gaonim extended the collection of the Ketuba to Metaltlin as well, their intent was not to give the daughters priority in the Metaltlin as they have in the Karka, but rather to make daughters and sons equivalent. Therefore, when the father leaves behind nechasim muatim in the form of metatlin, Beit Din do not separate first the entire amount required for the daughters, but rather the sons and daughters share all of it equally. Halacha yutet. Hiniach karka, v'yu nechasim rubin v'nitmatu acharkach, kvar zachu b'nei yorshim, hayu muatin bishat mita v'nitrabu acharkach, habanim yorshinotan, v'afilu lo nitrabu, im kanu habanim umachru nechasim muatin, michran kayam. Returning now to the case where the estate consists only of karka. If there were nechasim merubim to begin with when the father died, but these subsequently went down in value, and the estate can now be classified as nechasim muatim, it is too late for the daughters. The sons inherited the estate back when it was nechasim merubim. In the reverse case, where the estate started as nechasim muatim and then rose in value, the daughters remain with what they received at the outset, and the rise in value is added to the inheritance of the sons. In general, whenever the estate is nechasim muatim, if the sons sell the land against the instructions and wishes of Beit Din, then the sale is valid and the sold land is off limits to the daughters. As we learned in the last parak, the mizonot of the almana and of the daughters are not considered a pre-existing debt, and therefore may be collected only from nechasim b'nei chorin, property held by the estate, not from nechasim mishubadim. Halacha chaf, hayu nechasim merubim, v'yesh lav chov, o shitna im ishto shiyazun et bita, ein achov v'lo mizonot habat ishto mimatin b'nechasim, ela yirshu habanim akol, v'yitnu leval chov chovo, v'yazu bat eshet avihem ad zman shepasak, v'yazunu achayotem ad shivgoru, o ad shitarsu mitachet yidehem. However, if the estate qualifies as nechasim merubim, but the father owed a debt, including possibly a commitment to his wife to support her daughter from a previous marriage, as we'll learn about in Perek Chaf Gimel, then this debt does not detract from the value of the estate to make it be considered nechasim muatim. The sons inherit everything. They pay off the debt and provide mizonot for their sisters as in any other case of nechasim merubim. Halacha Chaf Aleph. Hiniach amana uvat. Bein mena bein mi isha acheret, vein ba nechasim kedei shi izonu shtehen, ha'mana nizonet, v'abat ish'al ha'ptachim. V'chein ani omer, shemizonot habat kodmin lirushat haben, ktubat imo shemeta b'chei aviv. Af al pi sheshnehem mitnei ktuba. V'kama chomer hadvarim, im nidchet yirusha shel Torah mipnei mizonot habat, lo tidachei yirushat ha'ktuba shu tnai beit din, mipnei mizonot habat. What if a father leaves behind a widow and a daughter, and his estate is not large enough to provide mizonot for both of them? Then the widow gets priority in mizonot. The daughters get what is left, and if there is nothing left, or once this runs out, they need to beg for food if they have no other income. The Gemara explains that a person must be more concerned about the honor of his wife than that of his daughter, and thus if one of them must beg for food, it should be the daughter. What if the choice is between mizonot of the daughters and the ketubat benin dichrin discussed earlier in this perek, if there isn't enough money in the estate for both? The Rambam's answer is that mizonot of the daughters come first, and he proves this using a kal vachomer. If mizonot of the daughters push aside even the yerusha of the sons, which is midoraita, as it does in the case of nechasim muatim from the last few halachot, then certainly it pushes aside the rabbinic tanai ketuba of ketubat benin dichrin. Halacha chafbet, mi shemet v'hiniach banot gedolot uktanot, v'lo hiniach ben, ein omrim yizonu haktanot ad shivgoru v'yachlekush shar nechasim b'shaveh, ela kulan cholkot b'shaveh. What if a father dies leaving no sons, only daughters? By Torah law, the daughters split the inheritance in this case. So will Beit Din intervene, like in the case of sons and daughters, to say that some of them, the older ones, the bogrot, will inherit, and they have the responsibility to provide the younger daughters with mizonot until they reach the age of bagrut too? The answer is no. The entire Tanai Ketubah of Mizonot for daughters was only established in a case where the estate is not inherited by them, but rather by sons. The sons provide Mizonot to the daughters. If there are no sons, then the daughters simply split the inheritance equally in accordance with Torah law, and each can provide her own Mizonot from her portion of the inheritance.
Thank you for joining me in learning today's Perek of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next perek.